You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings. Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
Man, we lose a lot of celebrity prognosticators.
Yep.
It's so one of the
sad.
It's one of the world's most dangerous jobs.
Is it cursed? How many have we lost? How many? Norm MacDonald passed away. It was a surprise to many. He had kept his illness a secret for 9 years.
Is that the way Alan Thicke started with us as a celebrity prognosticator? No.
No, he didn't start that way, but he ended that way. He was the reigning celebrity prognosticator when he passed away. Made me cry in my bathroom.
Are we cursed? Or are we haunted? Because Super Dave Osborne, Bob Einstein, was one of the greatest friends this show has ever had. And we've had these moments. Gene Okerlund has passed away. It's a byproduct of the show being almost 20 years old.
Bob Einstein refused to be celebrity prognosticator again because he found out that there was a curse associated with celebrity prognosticator.
Oh, boy.
Do you have any of that sound of him yelling at us? You guys had the strangest, most wonderful relationship with Bob Einstein, where you would have all sorts of conversations with him off air, where he refused to come on air because he said celebrity prognosticator was cursed, and then he died anyway, and now Norm MacDonald is gone too, and he was one of our favorite celebrity prognosticators.
We're all going to die, Dan.
Yeah, but... I mean,
wow,
these
that
are
ranks
really...
as among the most useless things.
Well, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong, but usually it's not immediately following a benchmark on a popular radio show. Abdullah the Butcher, another celebrity prognosticator that passed away quite recently after he appeared on our show.
You know what they say about Father Time, Dan, right? Undefeated.
Except for Tom Brady.
That's right. Good point.
Yes, Stugatz, we're all going to die. Make that the
Mike has me dying in under 15 years.
Except Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, he's not going to die. The subject line on this hour should be "We're all going to die." See if we can get some clicks.
I mean, now that we think about it, like everyone that participates in Celebrity Prognosticator is going to die.
Correct.
That's not why it would be cursed, but one of the things that Chris was saying when we were talking about the sadness of Norm MacDonald passing away, that we've all almost died, that we probably all have a story. I almost have a story of literally being hit by a bus, where you guys can say, could have come close to saying Dan Le Batard died. He was hit by a bus.
Bettis? What? Oh, no.
While we think of our near-death stories, let's play Bob Einstein leaving a voicemail for Allison Turner, our guest booker, who was chasing him to be our celebrity prognosticator again for years. But he refused because of the presumed curse around the segment.
Yeah, I called you back. I tried three times. calling me with those stupid questions, but here's the thing. I would love to answer those questions because I would have a lot of fun, but I like living. It's one of my favorite things to do. Get up, breathe the air, have some breakfast. If I'm working, I work. If I'm not, I'm not. That's all. It's very simple. It's black and white. I don't like to bring color into this, but it's simple. And too many people have died.
I mean, he's not wrong.
Didn't you almost crash a hot air balloon into a rhino on your honeymoon?
Yes, but that wasn't actually a near-death experience. We landed softly enough, and it was near rhino poop, not near the rhino. That would have been a lot worse.
I can't tell you how many times I was sitting outside of an LA Fitness on a three-way call with Bob Einstein, just telling me jokes that he had. Well, I could tell you, it was probably like three times. It wasn't like a countless number of times. But.
They were all good jokes, though, correct?
Some of them were repeated jokes that I had heard, you know, like the week before. But
you laughed like you were hearing it for the first time.
It was incredible. You know how many times he insulted me, told me my ideas were stupid? It was so great.
This brings me to Norm MacDonald, because he did awkward comedy, uncomfortable comedy, so very well. He would insult people to their face. There has not been and will never be a greater ESPYs than Norm MacDonald doing the monologue and actually cutting through all the mythological fame bullshit and actually going after people, going after the big, powerful celebrities in a way that the audience loved and ESPN immediately ended and regretted and got him out of there, never to host it again. But he loved awkward. He was so good at awkward. And this is the thing that always impresses me, Stugatz, because the level of discerning among stand-up comics who are great is the highest form of critique or judgment, I think, in entertainment. And when they say someone's a good comedian, that person's a good comedian. When all Norm MacDonald is somebody who's getting reverence today from a lot of people, but other comedians will tell you what he did was really brilliant, was genius. We had our experience with him because he would tell these long, sprawling stories, and he told, most famously, a bad beat story that was just a killer because he was a gambler, but he was a bad gambler. And one of the reasons we wanted him as a celebrity prognosticator is because he cared about it, but he was kind of a loser. And what says loser more than this bad beat?
One time I had a massive bet down. It was my last bet. I just said, I'll just bet all this. And then I got two aces. And then I was like, I don't know if I have enough money, but can I get some credit like from the casino to bet on this other ace? And they're like, no. And I'm like, does anyone else want to buy an ace? No, but yeah, everyone else there was betting small.
You were at a $5 table.
No, I don't like that. I don't like the what the hell? I'm watching the draft.
What?
I was just watching the draft. So, anyways, my two aces. I go hit me. You know, I have two. You know what I mean? So I have to hit. So I have an ace and an ace. It's a two. So I hit it.
Oh, no.
Because you couldn't split it. Here come the face.
Well, 22.
Oh.
So it was obviously I would have had 221. Instead, I have 122.
Mike, I'm pretty sure I have this right. It was not draft day. It was like 6 months after the draft. Norm was doing that as an audio joke. Do you have a date on when that sound was from?
It was also in the morning. He was watching
an old draft. That's what one of the sport dedicated channels, either NBA TV or NFL Network.
I think he put it up as a prop. I think because he was on a sports show, he just wanted the interruption, the loudness, because he loved awkward so much. We talked to him about the ESPYs. I'm telling you, there's never been a crueler or cooler monologue than the one this guy did at the ESPYs because of how uncomfortable he made an assortment of people.
Who was most upset with you after that night?
Ken Griffey Jr.
Really?
Did he say something?
Yeah, they told me, like after the show, they were
you know, there's this big party, and they were always like, you know, all through the show, this party's going to be great. And then at the end, I go, where's that party? And they're like, nah, I should just go back to the hotel.
That's how you learned that you were not invited to Ken Griffey Jr.'s party?
Yeah, exactly.
What do you remember most about that night? Is there one joke that you're particularly proud of? And you tend to be someone who doesn't, you know, you don't do a lot of reveling in the past. You move on. But is there anything in particular that you are proud of there?
Well, Woodson won the Heisman that year.
That's a good joke.
And so I said, you know, they could never take that away from you unless you kill your wife and a waiter.
It's so good, man. It's such a good joke. It really is. I was laughing because a lot of people were sending out a video. He's funny across the decades. The bit that he did on Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, 10 days after his death, like walking the tightrope of too soon, but he did the joke so deftly, so well. He's like, imagine that. He died. Crocodile hunter. Killed by a fish. All the other crocodiles, super mad. Like, did it deftly. I'm not doing it justice. The idea that he would be 10 days after someone's death. It was a beloved time.
Yes.
Everybody was still mourning that death, and he was able to do that joke deftly.
He had so many great bits, and with him passing, I was reminded of a lot of these all-timers. His monologue on SNL a year and a half after he was fired from SNL, he came back and hosted, and he's like, they fired me on the grounds that I wasn't funny enough, which at any other company would be an HR violation, but here, they kind of gotcha. And only a year and a half has passed. I didn't get funnier. The show's just that much worse. And I'm not even going to begin to try to retell his story, his joke that he did on Conan O'Brien, but it's one of the greatest commitments to a bit I have ever seen. I did not get Norm Macdonald when I was younger watching SNL.
Neither did I.
I didn't like him. And then 10 years later, one of my favorite all-time comedians. He is fearless. He goes into sets with the thinking, I want to bomb here. I want to be so unfunny that it's funny and I can pull it off. And he was one of the only people to ever do that. Comedian, respected and loved by all. A huge loss.
I am reading tributes here on Twitter from the likes of Steve Martin. You're right. Like, comedian, and they're all talking about the genius of Norm Macdonald. Like, he was funny, but the genius that goes behind him being funny is, it's pretty remarkable.
Give me all the others that you've known to sink into the discomforts and to make unfunny funny by just staring you in the face and daring you to not find it funny, not in any way bothered. I never saw on him a discomfort around the discomforts he would create. But I believe that when comedians admire him, it's from there. Oh, this dude just sits there staring at you and doesn't need the rhythms of when I say this word this way, I wait because I know laughter's coming because I've gotten so good at the sculpting of this. No, he'd reverse engineer it. He'd sit there and be like, no, that wasn't funny. And look, I'm going to stare at you and you're going to stare at me and it's going to become funny because I'm just going to sit in how bad that joke was.
If you get it as an audience, great. If I make you laugh along the way, awesome. But I'm really in it to make myself and my peers laugh. And no one made fellow comedians laugh harder behind the curtain than Norm Macdonald. And we've always talked about, why can't someone do the sports show well? It wasn't necessarily supported, but his sports show on Comedy Central was really great. Would DVR that show weekly. He was just an absolute gem.
Kept it quiet somehow during the celebrity age, because one of the things that lands with eulogies that are filled with hosannas is, how surprised are you? And I believe that what happened yesterday ends up spreading because nobody had any idea. It was something that he was able to keep a secret in Hollywood in a gossipy circle of people for a really long time.
And he even had a poignant bit on cancer. Don't say that I lost a battle to cancer, because the cancer dies with me. That's a draw.
It is. It's a tie. Don't make me a loser in the afterlife. He deserves what he's getting today and yesterday in terms of praise to Guts because of what it is that I'm telling you. We're the most discerning of the entertainment communities, the people willing to be brave enough to make a career, to Guts, out of standing in front of a microphone with the expectation of laughter and knowing how to make you laugh, which is a medicine that can pay millions of dollars with the guys who do it well. The comedians in this industry, there wasn't a one who didn't genuflect, right? There wasn't a one out there among the bigs, among the people you were hearing from who were saying anything other than Norm Macdonald is one of the best to ever do it. I wonder if the audience receives him that way, though.
In the next hour, I'm going to play the greatest joke you've ever heard.
Wow.
That's a tease.
What the greatest Norm Macdonald joke ever.
Is it the moth joke?
No, it's when he went on Conan and decided to just go in it for himself. And it was just a great insight into how hard he would make other comedians laugh and his whole bit. He was great, man. Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail ponds lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail ponds. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail ponds quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
Don Libertard.
If all the raindrops were lemon drops and gun drops, oh, what a rain that would be.
Stugatz.
Standing outside with my mouth open wide. Ah, 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 ah. If all the raindrops were lemon drops and gum drops, oh, what a rain that would be.
This is the Don Libertard Show with the Stugatz.
I remember that this guy befriended Warren Buffett. He is someone who's really interested in money and handling your money well, financial literacy. He's working with a lot of kids. It's a first of its kind free program, 160 students in Portland, Oregon, as part of the Sioux Family Foundation partnership with Stash 101. He's a menace, an unholy menace. He will eat your children.
He's a Super Bowl champion now too.
Yes, but he will also teach your children once he's eaten them to be financially sound. And Dominican Sue with us. Thank you for joining us. Tell me why it is that this is such an area of interest to you. And Dominican, did you know anything about money coming out of college? Did you know how much your life was going to change with investments and people piling on you wanting money? Did you know what was coming?
Dan, first and foremost, thanks for having me, but no. And I think that's a big reason of why I've been such a huge proponent of wanting to be and pushing kids to financial literacy at a young age. I think as we grew up, not only from elementary to middle school to high school, and then even more importantly into college, there's no courses. There's nothing that's giving you that understanding of how you're going to move into the real world and how money and finances in general are going to really control your life in a lot of ways, whether that's knowing how to manage your rent and paying bills on time, utilities, all those different pieces as you're a young man or woman going to college, or just even understanding that I was lucky enough to have a scholarship where people have to pay for schooling and being able to manage saying I'm now $250K in debt because I got a great law degree from NYU or whatever it may be. So those are the different pieces that I want to prepare kids and even youth and even adults alongside them, because their parents can learn right alongside them. I'm sure they didn't have those lessons growing up.
What can you tell us about what it was like for you leaving college, the mistakes you made or the things that you didn't know that you wish you had known?
So I was very, very fortunate. When I left college, I had a handful of mentors and people, not only my parents, that said, all right, one, my parents said, you can't spend any money without telling us. That soon became finding people that were around me from a standpoint of, I had the Gary Shiffmans of the world, and as you mentioned, the Warren Buffetts of the world, that taught me some different pieces of how to understand what finances are. And really that was allowing me to not make those mistakes and not be going into a hole and putting myself in debt, and understanding, how do I purchase a car, whether I'm going to lease or I'm going to purchase it. So those different pieces and having those nuances and people to help me were very, very key to my success and where I'm at right now, I believe.
How did it happen with Warren Buffett, and how much of a schoolboy do you, at the beginning, were you around him? Because you're like, I can't believe I have access to this kind of information.
Yeah, definitely blown away. I was early into leaving college. It was really my last year at the school. We both went to University of Nebraska, obviously, but met him my senior year during our senior game, and then asked to meet him later on in that spring, and was fortunate enough to be connected by Coach Osborne, and really just had a conversation with him for 2-3 hours and really hit it off, and have been friends ever since. We talked pretty much on a quarterly basis when he has time in between our schedules, as he's very busy and I'm in the middle of the season right now. So it's exciting being able to have that. But let alone, as I mentioned, I've had other great mentors. And I think there's guys that I even had at the University of Nebraska, like the Joel Moglias, who actually are coaches and huge finance people, where he was at TD Ameritrade, the chairman of that. So being able to tug on folks like that and learn from them was exciting.
Do you have a more interesting friend in your life anywhere than Warren Buffett?
Interesting. I think all my friends are very, very interesting. I would say all of my mentors and friends all play a huge part in my family and really just who I am as a person. The great thing is that we all push each other. And it's weird because a lot of my friends and family are much older than me, usually about 10 to 15 years. And yeah, I have childhood friends I'm still close with and whatnot. But for whatever reason, that's just the way I've been. I've always had that kind of old soul, to say the least.
Do you wander around the locker room warning people of the financial perils of football? I mean, it seems, I got to be honest with you, Ndamukong, I'm surprised that you've only been in the league for 11 years. It feels like you've been in the league across 2 decades.
Like we've known him forever.
Just in the middle, just bothering everybody, requiring double teams, and then chasing down wide receivers somehow at your size. None of it makes any sense to me, but do you wander around the locker room warning the young guys, hey, don't be an idiot about this?
Well, I appreciate the commentary, and I love making noise on the football field. But when it comes to the locker room, I'm very, very actually cautious of what advice I give. I always tell guys to go and research and do kind of their own homework to understand their own particular pieces. And really, it's more or less questions coming to me, like, what are my thoughts around this? What are my thoughts around these different pieces? Just because they've seen me out in the business world and being on TV and speaking to different things. And so it was weird, actually, even with Stash 101, one of my teammates, Ryan Jensen, happened to know one of the founders of the company that they actually acquired, called PayGrade, a while ago. And he hit me with a random text. He's like, hey, what are you doing with these guys? And I was like, oh, it's something that we're doing from a financial literacy standpoint. So it was cool. Stuff like that is usually how it goes.
What's life look like for you when you're done playing football?
Ideally, I'm huge into real estate. I started a development company a handful of years ago with a close friend of mine and business partner, a guy named Joel Anderson, who has one of the largest construction companies on the Pacific Northwest. So real estate's going to be a big part of that, of my life. Outside of that, definitely into investing, continue to work and be a venture partner when it comes to the funds that I'm a part of and the people and relationships I have, whether it's Andreessen Horowitz or General Atlantic or Marcy Venture Partners. And then really just being a father. I'm excited to see my boys that are now 5.5 months grow up, be there with them every step of the way, push them, challenge them academically, physically, from an athletic standpoint. My wife wants them to both be basketball players, so we'll see how that goes. But it's going to be interesting.
She doesn't want them to be football players,
nope,
correct?
Nope, nope.
She does not want them playing football.
It was funny. This weekend, we were all at home. We were watching football. I'm holding one of them. My mom was actually there, and she was holding the other. And they were like, see this hit, like that's exactly why my grandbabies aren't playing football. So it's okay for your son to play, but my grandbabies aren't playing anymore. So
do you have any supporters in the house who are saying is there anyone in the lineage saying yes, please? You didn't get all this money so that they could play football busting up their bodies.
No, it's definitely interesting though, because I grew up in a family that was really big on soccer. So European football. My dad played professionally overseas. My sister played for my dad's country, and my mom was big into actually cricket and track. So, no, I'm the first of the generations to actually get into American football. So it's definitely turning the tide, but it's really whatever they want to get into and what they're interested in is what they'll be allowed to do.
Physically, who's the most impressive family member throughout the line? Is it your great-grandfather?
I think my great-grandfather is definitely a big part of it, just from the standpoint of being 7'6", and being a huge man in his own. But my sister, Ngum, I would say is definitely a talent. She got 2 degrees in biological sciences and kinesiology, and then also, I mean, played Olympic level soccer and has done some amazing things. So I think she has the winning tote right now, but I'm trying to catch up with her.
If you had to guess, the parents prouder of her than they are of you? Like if you had to get an answer out of them that was 100% honest, and they had to pick a side, they couldn't say it's even.
I think they'll go with my sister without a doubt. She's definitely led the charge, and I've always said it from the very beginning of my career, and even leaving high school, I was following in her footsteps. So if she didn't pave the way and say, all right, she got a scholarship for soccer going to Mississippi State, I wouldn't even know what a scholarship was or even focusing on something of that nature. So she definitely has paved the way for the family when it comes to that.
If we spoke to you 4 years from today, who would be mm-hmm. more likely to still be playing football, you or Tom Brady?
It's going to be Brady. I mean, are you kidding me?
I probably put Brady there just because he's in the trenches a little bit tougher, and I've got a lot of juice left. But like I said before, my kids are kind of my big focus. Outside of football, and I love business, but Brady, I think he's going to want to play for the rest of his life. I have definitely aspirations outside, but 4 to 5 more years, that's a tough one.
Can you give us a Brady story? Give us one from the Ndamukong Suh file that would exhibit something that we don't know, or just a little bit about how much swagger he has, or whatever deal it is that he's made with the devil that allows him to play throughout eternity without aging.
No, Tom's an overall great guy, and I've enjoyed being able to get to know him. And really, probably the funniest piece is him actually laughing about me close to hurting him and putting him out for a playoff game. We were going against each other in, I think it was probably 16 or 17. And obviously he knew I wasn't trying to take him out or anything, but we're in Miami. We're a tough team. We want to always beat up on the New England Patriots, and just kind of being that lighthearted guy and being a good guy. He's somebody that I could see being a friend outside of football and not being on the same team.
Do you have a year that is more fun than all the others? Was last year the most fun year of your career? Is there another that you might choose where you were just enjoying yourself? Because this whole thing's a grind, Ndamukong, and I don't know how much fun it can be without the winning, because I can't imagine what your body feels like a decade in doing what you do for a living.
My body feels great. To be honest with you, I've got a great performance team that takes great care of me. So I'm very blessed and lucky in that space. But truthfully, last year in 2014, I'm very, very hard pressed between those two seasons of what's been the most enjoyable. 2014, broke a bunch of records on the defense side of the ball, went to the playoffs, and even that group. We have text message, our group text still to this day that it's blowing up all the time. It was actually going off this morning. So, and then I'm really close with the guys here in Tampa, and obviously winning a championship is something special, a group of guys you'd never forget. So I'm hard pressed between those 2 years.
When you mention performance team, I imagine you have an economy around your body because you're a smart investor. And so when you say my performance team, what is that? How sprawling is that?
My performance team starts with my performance director, a guy named Keith. And then I have a guy, Charlie, who's my physical therapist. And then I have a naturopath. that I work with and a chiropractor. They all see me. They've got their specific days. And then fortunately enough, we've got a great organization here at Tampa. And I work with some of our staff here for more acute things that are happening in and between practices. But I've definitely got a great team that is taking care of me from top to bottom and allowed me to play my 12th season right now.
You've stayed remarkably healthy. Like, that's part of it, right? You're basically repairing your body at all times. You're busting it down, you're breaking it down, and then you go immediately right back to repair.
No question. And that's exactly how it happens from a standpoint of whether you're an Olympic athlete or you're a triathlon or just somebody who's an everyday athlete that wants to run a marathon. You break your body down, you build it back up, and you're finding ways to continue to increase and get better each and every single day.
So what's the thing? Because I associate you simply with strength, okay? So what's the thing in the weight room that Ndamukong Suh can do if he were actually trying to impress somebody with feats of strength?
Feats of strength. I mean, truthfully, I pride myself being able to move kettlebells in some unique ways. And kettlebells from a standpoint of using 40 kgs and things of that nature, that where I'm doing kettlebell swings or I'm doing single arm presses and different things of that nature. And I think probably one of the most difficult things that I do in the off season are rear foot elevated split squats. So look that one up and do a couple bouts of those, like a 3x10 for 3 series, and you should have some fun the next day.
You're absurdly flexible for a man your size.
Those are tricky, though.
You're absurdly flexible for a man your size, correct?
Yeah, I would definitely say so.
A man that you've gone up against, has this happened in your career where the strength has surprised you, where you're like, oh, wait, this dude, okay. This dude.
No one's stronger than him.
Okay, then. But I want to hear some names from him on just somebody who got your attention with like, okay, maybe I'm not quite as strong as this guy, or maybe he's even in strength to me.
Yeah, Leonard Davis for sure. Cowboys. He was a mammoth in his own that I've gone against. I got respect for his athletic abilities, and he's also strong himself in Kyle Long. But the funny thing is I'm usually always got two guys on me at the minimum. So, I most of the time don't get to have those one-on-one situations, but, yeah, I would say those two guys that I've got some good respect for.
Is there a guy on the defensive side of the ball that you watch and you're like, okay, perhaps that guy can also throw an offensive lineman with one arm at the quarterback in order to get a sack? That guy might be as strong as I am.
Yeah, I would definitely say Fletcher Cox is a guy that I've watched over the years and said, wow, you're very, very impressive. And I actually, we had a similar coach and a guy named Jim Washburn that coached us both before he came to Detroit my last 2 years. So watched a lot of film on him. And then I would say a guy that I haven't been around that I've been very impressed with is Myles Garrett. He has seemed to be, for lack of better words, a freak of nature and very, very talented. So I'm excited to see where his career continues to grow and blossom.
All right, do me a favor. Put us in the living room these days when you're watching Nebraska football. Put us there.
Disappointment. Complete, utter disappointment in just how they've been focusing on not being a powerhouse. And to me, if I can ultimately, and I always try to be very, very truthful, it's unfortunate kind of how the things have unfolded there. And I hope that things start to turn around, but I think there needs to be some changes potentially and find a way to kind of get back to the old way of doing pieces. And I think they've started to do some different things when they brought in a new AD recently. But yeah, Nebraska football has not been how I left it and how Levante David left it.
As someone who cares about the art of the position, can you explain to us what you see when you're watching Aaron Donald?
Aaron Donald is a great athlete. And one thing he does is keeps people's hands off of him. That's one thing that I was always impressed with him playing with him for a year. Obviously, he's got great footwork, and that's hand in hand with your hand and eye coordination. But he's got brute strength as well, and built-in leverage, being a little bit of a shorter type of D tackle. So he's got a great method to master, and he works hard. There's something that I've always respected about him. He's a guy that's a tireless worker and always put in work and make sure he's not just using his God-given talent.
Do you run into many offensive linemen who are talkers?
There's some, for sure. And I think it's more of trying to distract versus actually meaning their words that they're saying. That's what I've started to see that a little bit more. And then even like the guys that I've played against, like I know, and I'm not looking ahead because we got a big game this weekend against Atlanta, but LA, like my old teammates, they've always like try and talk to me and like I'm dead faced to them. Like I'm a whole different person when it gets on the football field, as you know, and we're not friends. We can talk and be friends after the game and high five, but on the football field, you are wearing an opposite color.
So you're hissing with rage on Sundays? Like this is not everyone's the enemy, and you would bayonet everybody.
Unless you're lining up next to me or behind me, we are not friends.
Because you're such a nice man. You're gentle, caring.
Yeah, but this is, yes, he's gentle and caring, and he cares about your financial literacy and the financial literacy of your kids. But he's allowed to be something different on those other days. Before we get you out of here, just what do you want people to know about Stash 101, the summer school, and why it is you're doing it in Portland, and what it is your wife's connection is to it, and why these 160 students were chosen?
Yeah, Stash 101 and that partnership it's been a great one, and one that we're going to continue to grow and move. And my wife took a great lead alongside a close friend of ours, Brendan Scarlett, who plays for the Dolphins, and his foundation, Big Yard, and allowed us to, one, take care of our backyard in Portland and really focus in on financial literacy for the youth. And I think starting in that middle school and high school levels is never too early. And that's been our big focus, to help them understand what they're getting ready to go into, whether there's credit, debit, understanding all these different pieces that's going to be very prevalent into their young adult lives and as they get older.
Have you gotten into cryptocurrency? Do you understand it?
I understand it for the most part, and really more so from the blockchain view of things. There's so many different types of coins and metrics, Ether and Ethereum. You look at Bitcoin and you see the Litecoin piece with, I think, Walmart that just came out the other day. So I read up on it all the time. But it's something that I've started to hone in a little bit more and get education and taught. And I actually talk to my guys all the time about just setting up meetings for people to give us their understanding of it. And I think it's good to always have a small bite size, just have a little bit of exposure. Nothing you're going to bet the house on.
Is there anything in your childhood that would explain the roots of this to us in Dominican? Like the interest level that you have in this, the interest level in being a real estate conqueror and being maximum informed, where does it come from?
Without question, my parents. My father is very, very big in real estate. That's where I get it from. Even my mother, as I was a young kid growing up, I had to cut our apartment lawns and got no money for it. That's part of your duties and that's part of your focus. And so understanding that's how I knew I was able to go to AAU basketball tournaments and soccer tournaments and things of that nature because of the additional income that was afforded to me. And then that's really where you create generational wealth, being able to pass those things down. So that's one of my ultimate goals, is to continue to build an empire, show my kids how it was done, and at the same time, be able to pass something down to them when they're able to accept that. And really, I want them to also have an understanding of what they're accepting.
What's the end game, Sue?
I think the end game is to continue, like I said, build that empire, but at the same time, be able to help the community. And I think there's one thing that can go hand in hand, especially when it comes to real estate. You can build wealth and create generational wealth, but at the same time, you can also help people and find ways for them to be successful. I don't want to have success by myself and for lack of better words, be at the top of the pyramid solo. You can bring your family and friends right alongside you. And I plan to do that and fully in the process of doing that.
So Bezos, you're gonna knock out, like, what's the empire look like? The empire, the Sue empire in 10 years, what does it look like?
I don't know from a numbers perspective, but I'll definitely be shooting for the stars. There's no reason why you can't be more successful than some people that have come before you. It's just looking a little bit differently.
So you're going to visit space. You're gonna build it.
Visit space. We'll see about that one. I don't know. We got to do a couple more test runs before I jump in one of those.
You do that, Brady will be back here on Earth, still winning Super Bowls. Okay,
exactly. No question.
See you later, Ndamukong. Thank you for being on with us.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you? I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail palms lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail palms. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail palms quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.